www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans with a Storage Unpacked podcast, and this week I'm joined by Don Foster from Commvault. Don, how are you doing?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing great. Thanks for the invite this week.
Oh, no problem at all. It's good to see you, at least over the camera. Can't do face-to-face at the moment. Not quite, anyway. We're not far off, actually, in the UK. So, but at least we can have a chat over the airwaves, if you like. And I guess just, you know, have a conversation about not necessarily the technical side, which is generally what we've talked about with some of your colleagues in the last few recordings, mm-hmm. but to talk about customers and, you know, actual real world stuff, the stuff that really is important, I guess, you know, the real world expectations. So before we start and talk about that, could you just give everybody a bit of a background of yourself, just so they know exactly who you are and what you do with the company?
Yeah, certainly. So I've been with Commvault 18, almost 19 years. It'll be 19 years at the turn of the calendar year. And I was a customer of Commvault's a long, long time ago. So I've been familiar with the technology, really familiar, obviously, with the data protection space. And just as I worked with the technology and kind of seen the world evolve, my career has kind of evolved as well. So I've been everything from a sales engineer. Well, actually, we called them systems engineers before, but we'll get into that detail, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And progressed through the company in a number of different roles through product management, technical alliances, marketing, and now I find myself as the head of our sales engineers globally for Commvault.
Okay, so sales engineering, that's a slightly modified term from what we probably normally hear. What do you define as sales engineering? Because I think that's quite an interesting, you know, description.
Yeah, it's kind of the evolution now from, you know, maybe what we typically thought of as the pre-sales role or as the system engineering role back in, you know, maybe two decades or a decade or so ago. And it's evolved a bit more into really helping understand what customers are trying to achieve, helping them understand the art of the possible and how our solutions fit in that art of the possible. Maybe not so much feeds and speeds. I mean, it's still important to know how and what is possible within the technology, but it's going beyond just, you know, how the technology works and starting to figure out, you know, solutions and answers to the complex world problems that, you know, our IT industry folks are facing day in and day out.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because we are very quick to think that, you know, people who've got the technical expertise that come in with the salespeople are just going to be there to try and help you sell. But actually, in reality, I think a lot of customers want a relationship with a vendor. And especially in an area like you work in, where data protection is a long-term relationship, you know, you want to know that you've got a relationship with a vendor that can actually help you work out the best solutions for your solutions to your problem, rather than just sell you the next product.
That's right. It's not always about like what one vendor can provide. It's usually a mix of multiple smart folks putting their heads together and trying to achieve a differentiated outcome, or even thinking outside the box as a group. And that's sort of the beauty of our industry as it's grown. You know, those alliance partnerships, those technology partnerships, those customer relationships become so important because we all learn from one another at the end of the day. Where no one has figured out the best way to do IT yet, right? Why we're all constantly learning and working together to try to figure that out based on what our goals and needs are.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think inevitably we can learn a lot from the past, but new technology means that we're always having to think about how to use that new technology going forward. And we'll touch on that when we get to things like Metallic later on.
Excellent.
But for now, why don't we talk about the data center and how things have changed? Because that's really quite interesting. The evolution is enormously fast in IT. And that means everything from the type of data customers are creating to the platforms they're putting it on to where they want to put that data in their organization and so on. You know, what are you seeing with customers that has really changed since Commvault started this, you know, the business like 25 plus years ago?
Yeah, well, it's definitely shifted to a point where there is no such thing as everything lives within four walls, right? Every data lives wherever an organization or a business wants it to, based upon what they're trying to achieve. The edge, the cloud, at a service provider, in the data center, at remote sites. I mean, those lines have completely blurred, and technology and innovation has helped that happen. Now, I think one of the most interesting things that we continue to see is just the speed at which companies are continuing to innovate and drive, you know, more change. Whether it's just a change in data type, whether it's a change of hardware, you know, one of the interesting things that cloud provided, and we saw this through a lot of the convergence and hyperconvergence and just sort of the cloud sort of technologies being applied on-prem. Everyone is continuously evolving what they're doing on-prem, while they're also trying to make the cloud a true extension of, right. of their business. So yeah. cloud technology is making its way on-prem, and it's changing the way people think about how they manage, maintain, and drive the outcomes that they need. At the same token, we're seeing more and more folks at the idea of, you know, managing and running the data center sort of, you know, maybe we can find someone else to do this for us so we can focus on the outcomes and what our business is and leave it to the smart people that really just want to focus on IT and make that not make that a core of our business. And then everywhere in between, that's the great thing about this is every customer has similar goals, but how they want to get there is completely different. And what their challenges are kind of change the way that they're trying to aspire to reach those goals. So while we are all started with a data center and a couple of servers and some racks, I'll tell you now, every customer is hugely different based upon what they're trying to achieve, how they're building or growing their infrastructure, and even the partners that they have, so to speak, to make it happen.
It's really fascinating, isn't it? Because you look at the way the cloud changed things, and it had a massive impact on the way that we think about IT. So we went from that scenario where we spent a lot of time focusing on the actual technology and hardware and, you know, making sure it was up and running and all was available, to very much a model where we start thinking about the actual application, the services and the data. And that's really changed and pivoted, I think, the way people think of their, as you said, their on-premises stuff. And of course, as a vendor, that means you have to now come to the party with a slightly different approach and not just sell a product. You now have to sell solutions that span a whole range of things. And hence the reason, I guess, for the introduction of Metallic.
Yeah. Well, and the cloud is interesting, right? Because it brings a different cost model together with different technologies and just different ideas. And I think one of the most interesting things, and we've seen this through some research and conversation with customers and just research with certain analysts and, you know, different industry leaders. And the thing that we find that's interesting here is customers have been trying to move more and more of their workloads towards a cloud or a cloud-centric infrastructure for quite a while. However, I think there's a big focus now in 2021. We'll definitely see it into 2022, and that's optimizing the spend that's currently occurring. I've had a number of conversations where there's been a bit of that boomerang effect. Workloads move to the cloud. It's way more expensive than they thought it was. You know, the lift and shift idea isn't necessarily the best way to start to leverage those sorts of resources. It needs to be re-architected or refactored when I say it, the application, in order for it to take advantage of these new technologies. And, it's sort of one of those, you know, two steps forward, one step back to make two or three more steps forward. And I think we're going to find that that's going to be sort of an iterative process, a repeating process that we'll see over the next probably half a decade as cloud technology continues to mature. Mm-hmm. And then how we leverage it and utilize it in a cost optimized way continues to improve.
Yeah. And I guess as we've got more data, that shows us how we can optimize, because part of this is looking at the technology and saying, actually, I didn't realize it was going to be more expensive putting it here because I didn't understand the variables. And one of those variables has to be the amount of data that's being produced. You know, are you seeing customers producing a lot more data than they ever used to across the board?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unstructured data is just absolutely exploding. We used to hear about it in the form of data lakes and big data. That's still continuing on, and it drives and really is sort of the lifeblood of many of the new types of business innovation that's occurring. But everything now is being digitized. And with that is metadata, data about data, trying to leverage that information and sort of the computational knowledge of aligning that with our data sets and what sort of insights can you pull from it. And it all just continues to create more data. It's all important, but it definitely is putting a strain and a stress on the different systems and ideas of what is the most critical, the highest priority from an IT perspective. And of course, it always ties back to the whole ransomware conversation too. Just more data, more infrastructure, more potential threat.
Yeah, ransomware. Yeah, there's an interesting one. You know, why don't we talk about data protection challenges? I mean, ransomware is the flavor of the month in terms of every vendor's now offering a solution for it, providing solutions to fix it. But actually, it is a really genuine problem. And we've clearly seen that from the size of the ransoms and the sort of people that are being targeted recently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's getting more sophisticated, but at the same time, it's also becoming more widespread. And what I mean by that is the basic attacks that maybe we saw 3-4 years ago, that stuff has essentially been packaged up and made available through different dark web outlets and through different hacking groups to where, I mean, literally, you could probably be a 12-year-old technophile coming up in a young age and know how to put this stuff together in a payload that could actually execute a ransomware attack. And that's just the reality. But we've also seen a lot more of the sophistication, kind of like what happened with the SolarWinds exploit and just what that means. And I think the interesting thing here is we all know, I mean, this is kind of an old hat conversation. It's not if, but when. And really what we're finding that customers are asking for the most is help us with the incident response. You know, we know that you can provide a secure, immutable platform. That's sort of table stakes in our world anymore. It's what can you do to help speed that incident response, help us get closer to, you know, patient zero or workload zero that brought in the attack. And, you know, what are the things that we can do to then fence off or put a border around the attack when it occurs, then truly get it out of our systems, make sure that we can recover appropriately and ensure that we don't get reinfected. That's really what the incident response process is all about. And that's really where we find a lot of time working with customers to highlight how the monitoring, the response mechanisms, the isolation things, the isolation components can be very important in speeding that response and, you know, reducing the risk of what ransomware actually means to an organization.
And it goes back to what we said, I think, earlier on. You know, at the end of the day, we don't have a walled garden anymore with our own little data center and everything and all. It's all little area. We want the benefits of cloud. We want the benefits of a distributed architecture. But the challenges that come with that of opening up the network are these sort of things. So I guess, you know, we're just going to have to deal with it. It's going to be one of those things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about in terms of the transition between platforms? You know, one of the things I've seen in my slightly, sadly, rather too long of a career in IT is a transition from that very centralized mainframe environment, everything on one platform, through physical servers, through VMs, through containers, and then serverless. It seems that if we look at the way that the application world is transitioning, it's moving to focus much more on the actual execution of an individual piece of code rather than a whole environment in order to do that. But part of that is tied to the fact that we're moving towards a very much an ethereal nature. So physical servers lasted a long time, VMs lasted less, containers last even less time, serverless will be, you know, fractions of a second. So the way that customers deal with that data protection model in that scenario is a lot more complex because, you know, you just aren't going to have the same entities to remember that you used to have. And it means that you're going to have to sort of think things slightly differently.
One of the things that we are hearing from customers is the idea of, let's no longer, to your point, worry about the component that makes up the application. So let's be honest, everything we just talked about, mainframe all the way to serverless, these are technologies and innovations that help build applications. And those applications create the data and then they get stored somewhere, right?
Yep.
And so the question, of course, for the customer, the customer brings back to us is, hey, so if I've got all of these different components that build the application or make the application that runs my business come to life, then how are you going to help me ensure that I'm protecting all of these different pieces, that I've got at least some layer of consistency across the point in time, that I can bring everything back and that I can actually report back to the business unit or the owner that, okay, this is the SLA that we're providing for the application, not just the components, but for the entire application. And it doesn't matter if it's at the edge, on-prem, in the cloud, or more than likely, all three, right? Yeah. How can you provide that back? And those are some of the interesting conversations we're getting into with customers on ways that we can do, you know, smart grouping, do some smart sort of dependencies to a certain degree, and help them have that better view of, okay, this one part of the application is just a piece of code, to your point, like serverless. It comes and goes, yep. And there's really not a whole lot you have to worry about there, except for maybe a configuration file, similar to like a container to a certain degree, right? But what's really important then is the linkage, the understanding, the data sets, and then of course, any of the interconnectivity, whether it's through configuration files, whether it's through, you know, the workflow process of the order in which applications need to be brought back. That's where some of the intelligence, some of the interesting things that we're also doing with clients comes into the mix. And I think that's going to be even more important as the applications continue to become more agile, but also at the same time, a bit more complex for how they work and interoperate together.
Yeah, I think from your side of things, in terms of how you modify your technology, the interesting thing, I think, for me is to look at it and say, well, if I'm going to build a container environment, I would like to sort of have a certain degree of automated protection in there. You know, if I'm putting it on a storage platform that already understands my data, I'd like to make sure that's all set for me. And I'd like to have that integrated within whatever the underlying, you know, platform I'm actually using. And say, for instance, we all know things like CSI for containers. I would expect that, you know, my storage class provider to have a built-in backup solution that allows me just to say, oh, and yes, I want backup with this. Because ultimately, everything should be selectable through code, and my developers, when they're writing the application, should just be able to go, yeah, I want back it up. So you've got a sort of transition between the idea of what used to be a backup administrator going in and proactively backing that stuff up for you to putting in place a solution where the user effectively selects that as part of the service. So you're very much changing to a service model, I would imagine.
Yeah, to a certain degree, yes. Of course, what you just highlight is very idealistic, right?
Of course it is. That's my job.
If only the reality actually fell into that same level of idealism there. Because let's be honest, physics is still an issue. Data gravity is still an issue. The maturity of the technologies we're working with are still an issue. So yes, while you want to become more and more service-oriented, whether that's as a service, and how you're helping to deliver some of those technologies, or being service oriented that IT can leverage as a part of their own operations, there still is a fair amount of heavy lifting and probably critical thinking that has to be applied, because every environment is still different, and the way that technology is going to be leveraged from vendor to vendor, partner to partner, customer to customer, it continues to be different.
Yeah, I know. I always very much look towards the idealistic view, because I always hope that's where I want to get to, and pushing vendors to get to that point. Would they get there if you didn't? And I guess that's because I used to be a customer. So from my perspective, as I was a customer and an end user of all this stuff, I always had a vision of where I wanted to get to. And I know it wasn't always available, but you've got to have that idealistic look on it.
It's the art of what is possible, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And these things can be done, but we really, I think, need to see that bigger picture. And you've highlighted something very interesting, that a lot of customers will have a lot of legacy, a lot of, the term baggage sort of came to mind initially, but baggage is probably not very fair, because a lot of that data and systems were probably built and practical for the time they were there. There's an evolution with IT, because you end up never throwing away everything and starting again. You just, A, couldn't afford it, B, couldn't transition it, couldn't refresh it that easily. So it sort of evolves over time. And as a result, you end up with historical data that has to be somehow managed on a long-term basis. And as a company that's been around for a long time, then clearly you've got that capability, but you still somehow have to provide that going forward in all of your new offerings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole idea of no workload left behind, right? It's just one of the monikers that we leverage that ties into our industry's broadest workload coverage. It's interesting, Chris, I was just with a number of university students, and we were doing a program on helping them understand sort of job roles, what companies like Commvault do, what our software really does, and just kind of having sort of that sort of career and talent fair, so to speak. And one of the things I aligned to what we do is we help our customers learn how to juggle. Now, it was a funny storyline, because I basically said, look, go back to the 70s and you're juggling one ball. It was a mainframe, one system. You just had to throw it up and catch it. That was all it really was to managing it in IT. Now, I know it was more complex than just tossing a ball in the air and catching it. To be fair, it
was. I wasn't there in the 70s. I was there in the 80s, and I know it was more complex. Oh, yeah. But I'll go with it. I'll let you go.
But as you see, as then things compounded, right, we go to the client-server architecture, and then you had storage and SAN and compute and everything being separated, and then being everything reconverged. The storyline that I kind of gave to these students was, look, it's almost like it's not just adding one more ball to juggling one to two to three to four. It was like, oh, great, you know how to juggle one, now learn to juggle two. Oh, you can juggle four, now juggle four. I'm sorry, two, now juggle four. Oh, you can juggle four, now juggle 16. And it's that sort of exponential growth that we've been seeing with innovation that's been making then the idea of, well, hold on, that mainframe is still just as important as now my cloud native database or workload that I've got running in AWS or Azure. And I can't forget about all of this. And they all have different needs and requirements. And maybe it's a cube. One's a cube, one's a ball, one's a trapezoid, right? And you're just throwing these things up in the air. And that's kind of what has actually occurred through all the innovation within IT and technology in general. So what has to be interesting there is, I think that's where tools like machine learning and artificial intelligence can really help to at least standardize and normalize what it means to do this juggling, right? The operational parameters, understanding kind of what a normal mode of operation is and what might be an anomaly, and making it easier to highlight the anomalies, so that normal mode of operation can continue doing its thing as you'd expect, and you can start to put your focus to the things that fall outside of that. And then, of course, as that's sort of a core to building that sort of standard mode of operation in today's world. And then that frees up our developers, it frees up your team, then to be more focused on, okay, what does it really take to have a solid solution with all of these new application types? How do we ensure that we can provide all of the efficiencies, the performance, you know, deduplication, compression, you name it, right? All the security components for this new application, but still maintain all of the benefits and value of the innovation that we've seen, and even apply that back to what we're doing in the old school AS400 world.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's sort of the interesting thing that we've been able to execute on from our vision and our strategy over the last decade plus. We don't plan on stopping, that's for sure. But I do think it's important for customers to realize that the more silos and the more fragmentation that you drive into your environment, the more difficult it's going to be to kind of go back to that juggling analogy, the more difficult it's going to be able to toss those objects and keep them moving in a nice, clean manner. So
yeah, it's interesting because it makes it very difficult for the architect who's trying to work out how to plug all these pieces together and come up with a strategy. But, you know, that's part of modern IT.
It absolutely is a part of modern IT. And that's also why it's just not, it does take a village. It's not one person, not one vendor, not one, you know, one small team at the customer. It is literally a group of usually about 5, 6, 7 teams of people that help identify strategy, direction, what makes the most sense, et cetera.
I don't think there's ever anywhere I've ever worked where there wasn't some degree of some application that didn't have a problem and was kept for a good reason, even though we could, you know, couldn't be upgraded, couldn't be whatever, including, I think, one place where they'd written everything in a mainframe assembler so that they couldn't rewrite the code because they didn't actually have the source and nobody really understood how to decode it. And another place where in the UK, we have we used to have a monopoly on the gas market. Mm-hmm. It got opened up like 25, 30 years ago. One of the main monopoly companies used to send out an estimated bill based on your usage over the course of, say, you know, a number of readings over the course of the year. And they used a bit of code that actually calculated what they thought your bill would be. And it was superbly accurate at predicting how much you would be using. Very, very accurate. It was written and ran on a platform called VM, which was IBM's mainframe hypervisor, and nobody knew what the source code was. So we had somebody come in once a week to maintain the system, make sure it didn't crash or fall over, simply because that bit of code couldn't be rewritten. And it took them years to rewrite that bit of code.
There's awesome stories like that throughout the globe with different customers. Yeah. And that's why some of the traditional, call it legacy, historical, whatever you want, applications, infrastructures don't go away, because it's just we build and build and build and build, and sometimes things either get missed or forgotten, and it's still like, okay, yeah, we have to keep it working. So that's the beauty of no workload left behind, and one of the key things that we try to apply and keep innovating on as best we can, so that it doesn't become a bottleneck in the future as the organization continues to innovate.
Now, obviously, we talked about ransomware. I don't think we need to go back over that one again. But I do think the ransomware piece highlights a good example of modern data protection. And that's this need to make sure that data protection is right at the core of business. It used to be, and again, I always seem to go back and use some really old examples, but that's probably because they're the ones that are the most pertinent. But I know that in environments I worked in, if we did a backup and then we went to restore it from tape and it didn't come back, it was like, we're going to use the other one, or we'll use the day before or something like that. Nobody ever really got too stressed if a backup failed. Nowadays, with compliance and everything else that goes on, especially ransomware, there is no way you could accept that status quo. You know, backups need to be running and protecting data 100% of the time. And that's a really big challenge.
I mean, we used to think about business continuity plans with customers. And to your point, you know, yeah, we would do testing, we would do different things, different applications would have really hardened built solutions to make sure that it was instantly failoverable or at least recoverable within, you know, what, 15 minutes, 20 minutes max for some of the most critical. I do think you're right. The ransomware sort of era that we're in, together with the importance of how data is fueling business. First off, it's brought about a lot of the compliance and privacy measures that we've seen, regulation that's gone across the globe. But it really has forced companies to realize that, okay, if we're going to run our data off of our business off of data, then we need to ensure that the right security parameters and the right, you know, posture is in place. Because if we don't, then just as fast as you can grow and be in business, that can all quickly change. And so there's been a lot more rigor put into ensuring that these different systems, which have been developed and we've had technologies that can make them highly available and we can transform them into cloud, you know, cloud architectures, et cetera. It's now, you know, forcing businesses to really act, right? Make it a part of what their strategy is, not just to, okay, we could do that if we have the budget. It's nope. It's necessary for us to have the budget and to make sure that we're thinking along the lines of failover, recovery, what recovery points really mean. Like recovery time used to be the metric I think everyone focused on, but now it's really more about at what point can I get back. Time is always important for how long it takes, but it's the point in which I can bring my business back to the world. That's the, kind of the most important. I think that's really what the ransomware, like I say, the ransomware era that we're in today has sort of brought to the forefront. And that's why we're seeing more and more organizations talking through sort of the recovery response projects more than just, you know, we want to have a either a high availability or a colo facility. It's more about response recovery.
And businesses are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, global. There's no downtime, really. There's no off time. It's not like you can say, oh, sorry, we're not going to be around next weekend for scheduled maintenance. You know, all of that sort of stuff is way back in history. And that makes it incredibly difficult if you are recovering from something where there will always be somebody somewhere in the world who's waiting for your service to come back up. Yeah. You know, it's not like you can say, oh, we went down on a Sunday night at 3 a.m. Nobody will be up waiting for our system. Oh, they certainly will. There'll be somebody. So you're right. It's the incident response piece that becomes really important.
Imagine if you went to a business website and all that came up is, sorry, services are down. We hope to be back in maybe a week or so. Try us back then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll never go back to that website again, right?
No, never. Absolutely. So that really leads on, I guess, to a discussion, I think, Don, just what you were saying just there, you know, talking about just generally modernization, there are a few customers who come brand new and say, just give me Metallic and I want a SaaS solution and nothing else. There are very few customers that are like that. And there's an awful lot of customers you have that have evolved with you and continue to require have new requirements. So how do you go about that engagement? You know, what sort of things are involved in actually working with customers to ongoing develop that strategy?
Sure. So first, you bring up a really key point and value add that Commvault offers the marketplace. And it's something we call the power of and, right? So, you know, for those that might be listening that don't know, Metallic is Commvault's data management as a service offering that we run in the cloud as a service, right? Based on any number of workloads that you want protected. And we can talk about what that means here in a moment. And the reason we say it's the power of and is it's built from the same technology that some of the largest customers in the world use on premises, right, for protecting all of their backup workloads, whether they be in the cloud, on prem, at the edge, et cetera, through Commvault today. So it's like a different branch of the same code tree, so to speak, if that makes sense. That's been really optimized and focused for the as a service execution. And of course, like I say, it runs in the cloud, the brains are in the cloud, but we can still allow for the brawn or the data movement piece to still run on prem and give you that as a service sort of capability. Now, the really interesting part here is because it's the power of and, it's the same technology, it's a unified customer experience. And that's really the first thing that it kind of takes a moment or two to sink in for customers. They realize, okay, whether I'm brand new, you know, being born in the cloud, running all these workloads in the cloud, or whether I'm starting to make a transition to be more cloud driven, the last thing anyone wants to have to deal with is continue to build more silos. Right? I don't want to have a silo on-prem and a different silo in a cloud, or a different silo per each cloud, which is, you know, sort of how some of the native tools sort of fall down in that cloud-based world. And so what Metallic has now provided is it gives customers, old and new, a chance to look at their workloads and start to classify and build a strategy based upon, you know, the underlying technology and the vision that Commvault as a company has. So for example, let's say you're a current Commvault customer doing lots of great things on premises. You know, one of the big key workloads that people are always looking at, of course, is the Microsoft 365 suite. And there's some great differentiation that we offer around Teams and beyond just mailbox backup. But typically what will happen is we'll have the conversation with the customer and say, look, we all know that Microsoft 365 suite is a beast, right? There's a lot of data, a lot to manage. Yes, we can manage it from on-prem, but if you want to get out of the infrastructure management business, you don't want to worry about scaling your cloud buckets, your cloud storage, the infrastructure to protect the SaaS application. We can do that for you. In fact, so that's part of the value of Metallic, right? Is allow us to protect that cloud-native workload, keep the data in the cloud, optimize it for you in the cloud, but give you the same experience and accessibility as if that were actually on-premises for you. And that really starts to pique the customer's interest, and they start to realize, okay, so if I can do this for SaaS applications, Salesforce, Microsoft 365, the Dynamics suite, what about then VMs in the cloud? What about databases that I might be running in the cloud for a lot of these cloud-native workloads? And it starts to make sense because it aligns both the acquisition and the consumption model directly to how they're already consuming those resources. And again, they don't have to worry about having necessarily the right skills that are focused on cloud architecture, cloud backup, VPNs, all the other components that you have to have aligned. That gets handled for you out of the gate as a part of what Metallic, you know, as a service offering provides.
Yeah.
The real benefit now then is when you have an on-premises solution, we can extend with our hyperscale X appliances for that, the bring your own storage or the storage on-prem to have that high-speed operational copy. Or we can just simply run them together in the same unified experience to where you maintain what's on-prem. We help maintain and drive the infrastructure in the cloud for those cloud workloads, and we still unify the experience to the command center. So it starts to give customers a realization that, okay, if I'm 90% on-premises, 10% in the cloud today, and tomorrow I might be 60-40, I have a vendor, I have a technology, I have a solution that will help maintain that experience and that management as I shift, and I can also shift the way I want them to be protected. And also even think about even getting out of the infrastructure game for backup in general or as a whole as we make that sort of movement. One of the interesting thing is with customers, usually around that commercial, the smaller enterprise, small enterprise space, they are interested in potentially getting out of the IT infrastructure and backup game altogether. Yeah. And that's where the as a service offering becomes a home run for them from a just an outcome delivery and an ability to meet their SLAs.
Yeah. I was trying to use the term tail wagging the dog, and I'm not sure whether that translates to it into an American audience. And the reason I say that is because I've seen this so many times with, say, storage management solutions, where you put in something that's like an overall management tool, and then you realize that you want to upgrade your hardware and put in new products and new technology, and you get told, oh, well, we don't support that yet. You know, so you'll have to upgrade the management tool first before you upgrade the array. And you think, hang on, the innovation is in the storage solution I'm putting in, not in the management tool. So now the tail's wagging the dog. Exactly. And I think there's a risk that when we look at cloud and other platforms and everything else, that we could be in a similar situation where we are driven by our decisions about where we can run applications based on whether we can back them up, whether we can manage them, whether we can monitor them. And we shouldn't be in that position. We should be able to just think, wherever I put my application, I'll go and talk to a vendor, and I'm hoping and I want it to be the same vendor, and that vendor can always deliver the protection needs wherever I happen to sit.
And that's really what we're striving to be for our customers. I'm not going to say we're perfect at it, but it is definitely one of the big value props and one of the major positive positive lights that the analyst community and the technology community shines towards Commvault is our ability to do that for them. And to your point, right, as you move to the cloud, as those services become available, if it's just an API to get a backup, a dump, or to move that information to a bucket, then it should be relatively easy to go ahead and ensure you can capture that data, capture it as frequently as possible, and keep it secured as you're writing it off into the necessary bucket.
And I guess that's the way that you would address the legacy challenges. You know, the older applications and other things that are on-prem, you effectively still run, you might still have to run some on-premises technology, but then you surface that up into a single management plane that allows you to at least look at it. And should you decide to refactor that application, at least you know you've still got the legacy backups for that data somewhere.
Yep, and that's actually the beautiful part of just sort of the things and how Commvault was architected from the ground up 20 years ago. We've always kept a separate dividing line between what our control or service plane is and what the data plane is. And so that allows us, that's what allows for us to provide that logical sort of infinite scale across multiple locations, multiple sites, et cetera, even into the cloud, but then also keep localized high-speed performance for where the heavy lifting's done, where the data crunching and the movement's being done. And it also allows us to have teams that are focused on continuing to innovate for what we're doing on-prem, and to continue innovating for where we're driving cloud workloads. And to your point, the beauty is it all plugs into that service or control plane, which can essentially live anywhere. And that's what sort of gives us that infinite scalability and that overarching control.
Yep. So when you talk to customers, how do you feel that they're managing their own internal data management strategy? So do you think they're starting to build teams out that could do that task and they have particular owners, people responsible? Yeah, are we seeing more of an ownership, internal ownership sort of position from customers?
It's a tough question.
I mean, I guess particularly, for example, you know, somebody might call that a CIO. Somebody might be the CIO within an organization. But it's a bit more than that, isn't it? Because, you know, there's protecting data from a data perspective, as in looking at the content and saying, have we still got that? What is it? Is it compliant? But then there's another piece that says, can I protect anything wherever it is? And is somebody looking at that bigger picture?
So that question is the exact sort of struggle in driving data management across the enterprise, because in reality, there's about 7 or 8 constituents or people that care about what that strategy is and how you're going to execute it. And everybody manages that differently. I will say in many cases, there is a enterprise architect or cloud architect. I mean, it could have a number of different titles or designations that typically is trying to keep that big picture strategy and idea for what's happening. I think recently, more so than ever, the CISO team now has a data and or slash data protection, data management guru. It's a part of the information security team that is also very, very focused now on what it means to have that data protected and secured and what the recovery process looks like. You still find there are application owners, systems owners that are very focused on doing their own data protection. And then of course there's the compliance team that tries to get, you know, basically folded into the mix as well on, well, what's inside some of this data? Are we sure that nothing is actually being leaked outside? You know, are we governing our company IP appropriately? So it really does, and this just highlights the complexity of all these different systems and requirements being, going back to that juggling analogy, everything being folded back in. The best thing I can say there is, usually what we try to do with customers is tackle an issue or two at a time. Make it rock solid, build from it, and build from it quickly. It's some of probably the best success we've had with especially some large financial firms in, you know, okay, you have a backup success issue. Let's solve that first. We solve that, it becomes a foundation for how we can improve your data leakage scenarios, your security scenarios, your agility and portability scenarios, and the ability for doing different failover recovery routines. So that's typically what we see with customers. It's not necessarily a specific person or a specific set of teams, but you're going to find that there's usually 7 to 8 constituents that matter, that have opinions, that will definitely weigh in when it comes to what that long-term strategy looks like. And they all agree that they want to get rid of the fragmentation and silos. So that's the big benefit, right?
Yeah. And here's another thought. Imagine you've got data that lives a long time in an organization. Over the lifetime of that data, the actual value of that data may change. I mean, typically we used to call it ILM and we would assume it would cascade down and data would become less valuable over time. But actually, we haven't got that situation at all now, because we might have lots of data sources that we're trying to protect and look after and manage. And then somebody plugs that into some sort of catalog that allows other application owners to come along and say, oh, I could use that data. And somebody now uses that data in a new business solution that generates a lot of money for the company. And suddenly that data is now significantly more valuable than it was when it was first created. So now we might be thinking, I might need to change the parameters around that data and make it, you know, protected in a better way or more secure. So it's a never-ending sort of cycle now. It's not just a fading cycle. ILM is a very different model.
That's a great point. Data value is no longer correlated to age at all whatsoever today. It's the value is in the eye of the beholder and also the outcome that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, significantly. Okay, so let's talk about technology then and just try and understand if there's anything else we need to change. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about this because I personally have some ideas, and who cares what my ideas are? It's all about understanding what your thoughts are. But we already can do on-prem. We start to do SaaS. What else perhaps should we be looking at? And as an example, I was looking at things like, you know, we already embed APIs into VMware and to other platforms. You know, how much further do we need to go down that route? Do we need to be collecting more metadata? What sort of things, you know, can you see coming on the horizon that could make a significant difference?
I think more intelligence around application grouping or understanding the application is probably one key thing that we continue to hear a little bit from customers. especially I think as containerization, serverless, and all these different technologies come about, being able to understand the correlation or the relationship between them will help drive a more intelligent sort of, you know, failover or recovery state for customers. I mean, look, data continues to grow massively. So I don't think we've completely unearthed all the capabilities for being as effective and efficient in moving deltas only around our environment. The data gravity challenge is going to continue to be one. It's going to continue to be there as we see the data exponentially grow. So just being smart and thinking through all the different ways, especially within the cloud, that we can make data readily available, but also ensure that we're being smart in how we're moving information around, because that's only going to help basically everybody involved from a cost perspective and what have you. I think beyond that, then, it starts to come into how can we leverage things like machine learning? How can we leverage things like artificial intelligence sort of operations to better streamline just the overall call it posturing of the data environment, be it for security, be it for reliability, be it for access? I mean, there's a number of things that I think we will see advance in that front of being able to allow different APIs or different commands to crawl environments, understand environments, and really give a better picture of what's occurring and what might be a better predictive stance that you can take via security, via performance, or whatever it might mean, right? You know, outside of that, I think the real big advancement, and it's really going to be a mind shift change, is putting smart data protection and security policies first in the generation of some of these new architectures, ideas, mm-hmm. and data creation applications. I think you and I both know, living in this industry for a while, it's almost always come last or have been an afterthought of, oh yeah, very we got to back so. This up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's always a problem.
Yeah, I think that shifting to the forefront and having, okay, what's the way we can most efficiently protect these new workloads, whether it be a different database type, be a different, you know, scale out file system, whatever it might be. What's the smartest way in having that built in as a foundation of how that application is being created? I think that's going to be key as well for then helping to advance just the data protection, data recovery, you know, scenarios going forward.
I would like to see a bit more around what I can only describe as zero trust data. And I can't really think of a better way to describe it. And the reason I say that is that we talk a lot about the ransomware side of things, and we pretty much trust that almost all the data that comes into our organization from one source or another is genuine. The only thing we don't trust are things that come in via, say, email or other sorts of things. But anything we've set up to collect, we tend to think that's genuine. But I can see a scenario where the ransomware people start to create data that's coming into that organization that's deliberately false. Now imagine, for instance, you hijack a camera and you start feeding data and that shows false information from a camera or from some other telemetry device that's recording something. And now you can hold that organization to ransom because you can now affect their ability to deliver efficient, say, transport in an organization, within even mm-hmm. a town or city. So now we have to trust that the data coming into the organization is as valid as the data we already own. And that becomes, it's not about protecting the data we have already, but protecting the data that's coming in to make sure it's really real. And I think that could be a really interesting area where we might see an exploitation next.
That is a very interesting idea. And I'll be honest, not one I've heard, but it absolutely makes sense. And it's a threat vector, I'm sure, that other security-minded folks well beyond myself probably do have in the back of their mind somewhere.
Yeah.
But that's a scary proposition when, you know, to your point, the assumption that this is good data and it turns out to be bad data, and then you don't know what is good or what is bad. And at that point, you've completely destroyed your reputation in the marketplace, right? That's the impetus of something of an attack like that, of what it could mean.
Yeah. And I think that's where you start to say, okay, it's not now just about protecting data. It's about using AI and the tools you've already mentioned to make sure that I actually have good data. So, you know, that there's all sorts of ways we could discuss that. And that's maybe a topic for another time. But, you know, it's going to evolve into actually the content itself rather than just protecting what we might already have. It was, yep. I think, quite fascinating.
Well, we're seeing some of that already with deepfakes and how interesting that technology has become even in video by itself, right?
Yes, exactly. So lots of things to really think about there, you know, in terms of how new data gets created. But, that's, I think, part and parcel of, I think, to be honest, Don, of what we talked about from start to finish in this conversation. This environment is evolving. It's complex. It's only going to get complex over time. You really do need to focus on your data. And it's, you know, it's an important part of business now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think all of the things that we've talked about, from no workload left behind to movement to cloud, to some of the technological advances that we're seeing, and just the juggling game that you have to play today, from the, you know, traditional or legacy applications all the way to something that's net new. The only way it really gets more simplified is if you can start applying standards and sort of a strategic approach to everything. So hopefully we can continue to help anyone out there that's listening and kind of show you some ways that we can make that more streamlined and simplified.
Brilliant. On that note, time to wrap up. On that note of showing people, where would you like me to point them to in the show notes? Where would you like to suggest they go and look? It might be just the website. You know, you might have some other areas to look at. What do you recommend?
Yeah, I think the two simple things to get started on, obviously Commvault.com is a great place to learn about all the things that we do in the data management protection space and what our security posture and stance is. We've got some great YouTube videos on our YouTube channel if you do want to check us out on YouTube. I've got a few lightboards there as well that will kind of give you some of our strategy and just direction on how we're approaching the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, definitely go and check out metallic.io. You can even have a chance to have a free trial, if you like, for like an endpoint or an edge laptop-based protection, just to see how simple that can be in delivering backup as a service and data management as a service for the enterprise. And it'll give you some ideas for exactly how we're transforming and what that might mean also for your business.
Brilliant. Thanks, Don. I'll put connections to that, all of that stuff, into the show notes. But for now, Don, thank you very much for your time. Look forward to catching up possibly face-to-face next time.
Absolutely.
But for now, thank you very much. Good conversation.
Right. Thank you so much, Chris.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.